Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth, and we are back with a vengeance. I don't know if it's a vengeance or if it's just a silly radio voice that I did for you right there. But hey, we are back. No Jeremy this week. Last week you got Ashley and Jeremy. Now you get the OG and the new G all in one. Soon, all of the Gs will be reunited at a future time and place. And boy, oh boy, there's a couple stories that kick off this episode. But most importantly, we go over one of my favorite movies, one of Ashley's favorite movies, in Return of the Living Dead. So get yourself ready. But if I could implore you from the bottom of my heart, in the sweetest place that I know, drop us a 5-star rating on the Apple Podcast, the Stitcher, the Podbean. Leave us nice comments. Or, you know what? If anything, word of mouth goes a long way. Tell a friend about the Quality Time Podcast, the one that you love, the one that we love to do for you, so that the word of mouth can spread, much like the coronavirus. Listen, if we can get the coronavirus up to 300,000 cases, we can get to, like, I don't know, 100,000 listeners. I truly believe that with your help. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn that volume up to 11, and get ready for Return of the Living Dead.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Sleep for me is maybe 4.5 hours. So, like, after that happens, I'm... What's up?
I just walked by this towel.
What towel? My shower towel? Is it bad? Let me smell. My wife's bringing me down my shower towel. I don't smell anything wrong with it. It smells
no,
fine.
Eric, you're so serious? Gross.
Okay, it smells like wet dog, but I'm trying to play it off like I'm not a monster. I think it's fine. There was a couple of moldy spots on it, but I washed myself with it.
Oh.
My wife is throwing up at the fact that I washed myself with a towel that literally smells like it's washed the dog 3 times. So she's legit offended right now.
She should be.
I was good.
I like her more already.
Oh, yeah. Now she says it can't be washed with other items as it might spoil the rest of them.
You're like milk that's been left out too long.
I am the milk on a July 31st sunny afternoon. That's me. But look, the dog likes my smell. Come here, get close to the crotch, dog.
Oh.
I washed. I smell great now, though.
Rancid orange.
Hold on. She said it smells like rancid oranges is what she said I smell like.
She's a great descriptor. I like her. She's also been through this with you before.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I didn't shower yesterday at all, and I woke up a bit randy today.
Oh.
Usually one pump of the old shower gel gets it done. Got done half my body, realized I needed a second pump. It had, like, dissolved most.
Did you say it makes you randy? Because that is not the right word. You mean rancid?
We're a pre-show recording right now.
Sorry.
It's okay. Now you made the show, hon. You're on Quality Time officially now.
Ew, it's Yay. Quality time.
Ew, it's Quality Time and not Laugh Finder? She goes, it's okay. Nobody listens to Quality Time anyway. And then she shoved me off, and now she's up. Now she's away. I had to do heavy editing of your first episode with Jeremy. The levels were jacked, and it was 2 hours and 30 minutes long. I cut it down to a nice hour and 50.
Look, I predicted that was going to happen after we did the episode. I just decided there was, I didn't want to freak you out by telling you how bad I thought it was, but I was like, he can just decide for himself, because if Eric's taste is terrible, Eric will be like, this is great, and I won't have to say anything. But then when he's like, this is awful, I'll be like, I know, I'm sorry, Daddy. Like, <it's- laughs>
don't punish me.
It was a little bit tough. I also didn't have the heart to tell Jeremy I fell asleep at the end of the movie and panicked when he made me be like, hey, give away the big reveal at the end. And I was like, you do it. Because I fell asleep and didn't know how the movie ended.
I love that Jeremy's favorite thing is to give give trivia questions. There's zero chance you'll get. He did it like four or five times. Just like six times. He's like, do you know who this 1970s film star was that was in an episode of the $2,000 Pyramid? No, actually, could you fucking tell me? Because I'm under 30 years old and you're a monster.
I feel bad saying it, but at one point I'm like, I was born in 1992.
God.
I'm like, Jeremy, I have no idea. Like, I'm nerdy, but I'm not that nerdy.
That is Jeremy's MO, and he played it to a T, and that episode goes up at midnight in its entirety. I was not going to break it up into two and make people suffer through 2 weeks
no,
of it.
No, agreed. So, you are totally right. No, I agree with
get,
you.
They get one episode. I can't wait. Oh, yeah, I texted a Joe Robinson correction to Joe, and I said, true or false, Joe, when Jeremy was talking about Rowdy Roddy Piper, he called him, say, Rowdy Roddy McDowell. Which is a true thing that happened in the last episode, which made me honestly spit laugh while I'm at the beach and my children are just like, why is Daddy have his headphones in for 4 hours? And I'm like, I'm listening to Jeremy's audio right now. And it was a hoot.
Aww. So, well, here's the thing. He tried so hard. He was so professional, like setting up. He really worked hard to make it the best, you know, that he could. And I could tell he was nervous. I unfortunately was hung over for a second weekend in a row, and I was like, oh man, I can't tell Eric how fucked up I am right now, because he's gonna be pissed.
I don't, do you think I don't do this show drinking constantly?
No, I know, but you drink more than me, so you always function like an alcoholic. But
thank you.
But two, I knew for weeks that it was going to be just me and Jeremy, and I still was like, I'm going to get fucked up this weekend, and I'll handle the consequences.
Listen, I'm very excited. I hope the fans enjoyed my weekend off. I can't wait to see, because as we're recording this, I don't know the feedback. It technically comes out tomorrow, but here we are today. It's welcome back to Quality Time. We're doing Return of the Living Dead. I'm excited. Jeremy's working, so I'm joined by my co-host, my fam, my boo, Miss Ashley Pontius. How are you doing?
Hi, Daddy.
Oh, through the new buttery fucking interface you got there that you sound, look at you, professional sounding. You're not going through a microphone on a cell phone anymore. You're a real part of the show. You got a golden microphone. Ugh.
Yeah. I'm very excited. Obviously, I know all of our listeners probably know this, but Eric is the heart of this podcast. Oh. And he's like, I love you. I need to get you an interface because you sound like dog shit. So we got me an interface, and Tommy Zimbazo from Laugh Finder podcast was nice enough to help me get the rest of my equipment, figure out what I needed. So I just got tag teamed by just the best boys in the business. So
that's it. That's an Eiffel Tower you wanted to be in the middle of. Just two giant bears and the lack of pleasure that you received from it was the highlight of my day more than anything.
I've always wanted to be the picnic basket between you two.
Hey, boo-boo. Let's take a look at our picnic basket.
But it was good. No, so you guys had a great show. Jeremy, unfortunately, working. We kind of threw together a last-minute episode and a banger at that, which I'm excited about. I'm back from the beach, which I had a nice week of relaxation, kicked my feet up, actually got a tan, and a tan for me is actually just connecting enough of my freckles so I look a different color. That's all that happens, really. So I've got some new spots. Ooh, this one, I need to get checked out by the doctor. Might be cancerous. Who knows? But that's, no, it was fun. I've been out there. Now, listen, in our COVID-ridden world, okay, there wasn't a lot that we did down at the beach other than go to the beach and then come back. And, like, I went to one bar, okay, while I was down there. Mm-hmm. That was for about, like, an hour or two. And then I went one other time during that whole week. I went out to eat and got raw oysters, and then we took Carrie out back. But everything was get food, come back to condo, and stuff like that. So I was getting a bit stir crazy, but by the end of it, because I guess it's a mixture, because I'm on vacation, I'm not driving, I'm drinking heavily every single day. I get to like day four, and every little thing that, like, I feel like, I think I have just a little bit of a sore throat. Oh my God, I got COVID. I got my whole family. I'm freaking out about COVID-19 for the last like 4 days of my trip, because I'm like, we could be anywhere. Every time we get into an elevator, it is just frightening. I was like, we are trapped in a room of death right now, and I cannot get out. I'm legit freaking out. Now that I've been home for 24 hours, and I had a light day of drinking as I'm weaning down so I don't get the shakes at work Monday. I'm sitting there and I'm feeling so much better. I'm like, it's clear I don't have COVID. I have all my taste buds. I have all this. But honestly, the last like 3 days, that's all I've been thinking about is that one of us has COVID. We're all going to get it and we're all as good as fucking dead. And I have been at my wit's end.
God. Yeah. Eric messaged me yesterday and he was like, oh my God, like, what if I have COVID? Like, oh my God, what if I'm the piece of shit dad that brought it home to the family? And I'm like, Eric, I care. Like, I swear I do. I know this is a big deal, but some of us have bigger problems. Like, I let a 22-year-old dump inside me. Like, I've got bigger problems right now than you do. I don't think you have COVID. Stop drinking.
I will not fix this drinking problem. But no, that's good. But I'm glad to be back. I also feel this weird guilt when I'm not working, that I feel guilty when I'm not working. So I'm actually glad that the first second I got back, I was up at 5:30 on a Sunday morning prepping for this show and working feverishly, because I was just like, oh, we'll do a relaxed fit episode where we just talk about Return of the Living Dead. And then I was watching it. I was like, I need to give it the respect it deserves. And yes. So I watched it all again, and by the way, I love this film so goddamn much. Yes. That I couldn't do the proper it needed to be treated with the respect that it deserved. So that's what I'm most excited about. Ashley, where does your history with Return of the Living Dead come into play?
Oh man, so I first saw Return of the Living Dead, I want to say when I was college, which I know doesn't seem like that long ago. But there are so many zombie movies, and it's so hard sometimes to comb through as you're getting into that stuff, because you don't know, like, what's quality, what's kind of shit, you know. It's hard to find out what's a good movie. And Netflix was still kind of newer at that point, like the streaming service, and it was on Netflix for stream.
Netflix in its infancy, I remember how fucking shitty it was. No, it was bad. I remember one of their staple movies was the movie, it was Eric LaSalle's Crazy as Hell, which if you haven't seen that movie, it's bad. And I just remember there not being a million choices to see, and I was just like, there's no way this is ever going to
fucking take
off.
Actually disagree with you, and here's why. I actually feel, no offense to new and upcoming filmmakers, but I actually feel, back when Netflix was first streaming their services, I felt like I could find classic horror movies that I knew or were well received, recognized, whatever you want to say, on Netflix. But now I feel like there's so many new and upcoming ones that I can't find any of the good classics are not on Netflix anymore.
They're not. And in fact, I had to get this movie on a streaming service called Vudu. So mm-hmm. I had to go buy this on Vudu. So I got it on Vudu, which was fine. I paid the $3, so I could stream it here. I tried to steal it every possible way. I was kind of ashamed that I didn't already own it. I thought I had, and honestly, on a VHS somewhere, I could probably find this.
I wish you would have told me. Like, I mean, I know it was a last minute change. I wish you would have told me because, yeah, I have it on my collector's edition. Because when I saw it in college, I love this movie.
Yeah, and I remember this was a movie I saw, it wasn't my first horror movie, but I remember mm-hmm. this was the first one I watched it right away. I was like, this is supposed to be funny, and I understand that it is, right? Like, it was, yes. like, it hit me in the right time. I was like, this is comical. I like this.
It's funny, but I love the special effects and the gore. I mean, it's not the biggest, you know, like gory, bloody, but there's something about the special effects I'm crazy about.
Well, this is also, it brings me back to it. I mean, the Return of the Living Dead, there's so many good elements that are in this movie. And we can start with the writer and director, Dan O'Bannon. Dan O'Bannon is actually, this isn't even his greatest piece of work. He's actually wrote the original screenplay for fucking Alien. So, Dan O'Bannon, big deal. Alien, he basically wrote the original screenplay for what would become Alien. Originally, it was called Star Beast, and you can go back in our archives to our Alien episode to hear more about Dan O'Bannon. But the fact that he wrote and directed this is just phenomenal. Not to mention, it's filled with like all types of horror movie icons. I mean, for mm-hmm. one, it has James Caan, who plays Frank. It has Don. It has Michael N. Nunez, who mm-hmm. plays Spider, who's actually at Friday the 13th Part 7, I believe, mm-hmm. and he gets stabbed for eating a burrito. It also has Linnea Quigley, probably the original Scream Queen, which we've done on Fright Night, or no, not Fright Night. Mm-hmm. It's Night of the Freaks, I believe. God, I'm gonna go nuts over that one. But she shows her titties in every movie. That's Linnea Quigley's job, and mm-hmm. she does a phenomenal mm-hmm. job in this one. Not to mention, it has the guy who plays Tommy. It has actor Tom Matthews, who plays Freddy in this, who plays Tommy Jarvis in Friday the 13th Part 6, the one where basically Jason becomes a giant Frankenstein undead monster who is now supernatural and can just fucking never die. So just a lot of great fucking cameos. And not to mention Jeremy's favorite and the recently deceased Clue Gallagher. Wait. So Clue Gallagher, Jeremy actually made that song for a couple weeks back for the movie Feast, which he's in, and also he's also in the movie The Devil's Rejects. He's the husband who gets cucked by Otis there. So, you know, what a storied career. What a a film cast to remember right here.
Yeah. Well, and also unrelated to the film, though, as far as horror movies, quick shout out RIP to John Saxon, who passed away yesterday.
God, yeah.
Dad from Nightmare on Elm Street. What an awesome dude.
Yeah. And also he's from, I think, The Howling 3. And there's another good one. Oh, he's from Enter the Dragon. He does karate. Yeah. So he learned karate from Bruce Lee as a white man. And I will say this. In Enter the Dragon, he is the oiliest man in that film, somehow. He has a natural glisten to him. You put him down a piece of dry saran wrap, he doesn't bunch it up. He slides all the way down to the end. So,
oh my God. I have to tell you, though, like, not to make people upset, but I think I'm pretty sure my favorite movie about an Asian teaching a white person martial arts is probably Kill Bill. But
yeah, no, you're right. Everybody, hey, listen, we all love a good Asian teacher with giant fucking butterfly wing mustaches that can kick white people in the face. So, we start this movie out. We get to meet Bert, who is played by Clue Gallagher. Frank, who's played by James Caan. And if you don't know who James Caan is, that is he's actually the realtor in the movie Poltergeist. I forgot to mention that earlier. He's the guy that sells them the house and doesn't tell them that's on an ancient Indian burial ground. And of course, we meet Freddy, who's played by Tom Matthews from Friday the 13th, Part 6. They all work at this medical warehouse where we get to see how they sell, you know, different types of cadavers. They got one currently in the freezer. They got dogs that are cut in half, so you can see them all splayed open. All types of macabre crap all over this place that they distribute all over the greater Kentucky area. And Frank gives Freddy a rundown of some of the things that they have at the warehouse here.
Let me ask you a question, kid. Did you see that movie, Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah. That's the one where the corpse started eating the pupil, right? Sure. What about it?
Did you know that movie was based on a true case?
Come on, you're shitting me, right?
I ain't never been more serious in my life.
That's not possible. I mean, they showed zombies taking over the world.
Well, they changed it all around. What really happened was, back in 1969 in Pittsburgh at the VA hospital, there was a chemical spill and all that stuff kind of leaked down into the morgue and it made all the dead bodies kind of jump around as though it was alive.
What chemical?
2,4-5-trioxin, it's called. It was to kind of spray on marijuana or something. And the Darrow Chemical Company was trying to develop it for the Army. And they told the guy who made the movie that if he told the true story, they'd just sue his ass off. So he changed all the facts around.
So what really happened?
Well, they closed it all down, see? And the Army shipped all that contaminated dirt and all those dead bodies out. And they kept it a secret.
So how come you know about it?
What typical Army fuck up? The transportation department got the orders crossed. And they shipped those bodies here. Instead of to the Darrow Chemical Company.
Oh my gosh! So basically, they use I like that they use a basis of Night of the Living Dead, the thing that spawned all zombie films for the most part in modern society. They start with that as that's a true story, and this is actually what happened. The bodies from that thing got shipped to here. They're in canisters downstairs. So I like that this is already playing on our fears and the knowledge that we already have in the zombie world, right? So because we by this time, we've already seen Night of the Living Dead. We've seen Dawn of the Dead. There's been Italian movies like Zombie that have come out since then. So the zombie phenomena is in full effect. This is the height. And they've taken all these things and they made quite a beautiful piece of art out of all this. I like it because I don't know. I'm not a big Siskel and Ebert fan. And Roger Ebert, who's generally fucking hates horror movies, gave this one a thumbs up because it said it had its own style. And it is a very much a rock and roll version of a zombie film where it doesn't take itself so seriously but makes it very, very fun. And Roger Ebert, he recognizes real when he sees it, and he gave this movie the respect it deserved.
Hell yeah. I mean, I gotta say, as someone that works for the VA, I can confirm that we do make zombies at the Pittsburgh location.
Finally, breaking it wide open, are ya? Oh, yeah. So as they go downstairs to go check out the barrels that are down there, and let's see. And as they're looking at this barrel, they can see what will be we'll meet as the tar man later on in one of the barrels.
You said that thing was alive?
So they say.
Hey, these things don't leak, do they?
Leak? Hell no. These things were made by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Oh, fuck!
Gas just spills out over all of them, which brings us to the beginning of Return of the Living Dead as Freddy and Frank collapse under the weight of the gas, and it starts to fill throughout the entire complex, waking up the dead corpse that's in the fucking deep freeze upstairs as they pass out, not knowing what they're going to wake up to, this hellish landscape that awaits them from here on out.
I love the credits where you see the body that's in the canister. Mm-hmm. I love as you kind of watch it melt and start to kind of, I don't want to say decompose, but slowly liquefies.
Yeah, it's a very similar to like the effect that you see in Raiders of the Lost Ark when he looks into, yes, like the Ark of the Covenant and it just totally melts his face. The practical effects in this are, they're not fucking super great, but they're good enough. Like, they're just good enough. Like, we'll get into Tar Man later and like the little half zombie that they talk to. But the special effects are right where they fucking need to be in this movie.
And I think that's what resonates with me, because when I'm under lights too long at a show and my makeup starts to melt, I feel the exact same way.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, it's 85 degrees.
You chose poorly.
So next we see Colonel Glover, who has a wonderful like mansion in San Diego for some reason. He goes and his only job is to look for these lost barrels, which he's not doing a great job. He's just sitting at the beach looking at his giant computer, hanging out with his wife, drinking scotch. He's like, hope they show up soon. I don't give a shit. Like, and then we also get to meet our punk kids like Spider and fucking this cast of punk kids, which look like they're all part of the band The Cramps, which are featured heavily in the soundtrack of this. We'll get to them soon enough. We haven't even gotten to the soundtrack. The soundtrack is also a 10 out of 10 on this, in this movie. Mm-hmm. But we meet Chuck, who's kind of like their mod guy out of all of them. We see Spider, Scuzz. We see Trash, who's played by Linnea Quigley. Suicide, who's like a full-on punk rocker who has a fucking earring that goes from lip to ear. The whole gang. And then we have beautiful Tina, who's just like, I'm fucking the mall girl that just hangs out with the bad boys.
I don't get this. I literally made a note that says, do not understand friend dynamic.
Yes, they shouldn't. None of these people should be hanging out. They're just like, if we put as many kids, they were like, you know that movie The Breakfast Club? Like, yeah, what if we made more punks in it, but also we murdered them all? Wouldn't that be a good movie?
So. Yeah, it's Breakfast Club on meth. Like, it's very, yes, it's very confusing.
It doesn't make sense. They shouldn't be friends. But, you know, hey, you don't pick your friends just like you don't pick the ones that you love. So, as the movie... so, as the movie progresses, they head back upstairs. Freddy and Frank are finally awake from all the gas that's finally cleared out. They see that the body that was in the canister must have melted when it hit the air.
Listen, I don't guess we better tell Bert about this. It makes us look stupid or something.
I can still smell that stuff. It must be in my nose. Either that or it's all over everything.
Yeah, I better spray some deodorant around here.
And he just starts like spraying Lysol around to try to get rid of the smell. Like somebody who smokes weed in their house for the first time and they realize, oh, this was a bad idea. Mom and Dad are literally in the other room. So I like that 50-year-old Frank takes that same method and approach to fix the situation.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the American response right now to COVID. It's just like, it's in the air. Spray Lysol.
So they hear some panting coming from one of the aisles, and they go to see that one of the half dogs is alive and breathing on the floor. And Frank immediately, Frank handles none of this information well. He immediately takes a crutch and just starts beating the shit out of this dog that's not moving, just kind of breathing and looking like it's half alive. And just like, kill it. I want it dead. And
it's just whimpering.
Yes. Just beats the shit out of this little fucking half dog. And then during all that, they can hear in the freezer the fucking body that that he showed him earlier that looks like, literally looks like a living Homer Simpson in there. He's orange and jaundiced and is screaming like he's missed the last donut train out of fucking Arkham Asylum. And he can't get the fuck out. They freak out, lock themselves into the office, and have a little chat on what to do. Ultimately, Eventually, they're like, we can't call the number on the side of the barrel. That would be a bad idea. We can't call the police. We should just call Bert, their boss, who we met very briefly at the beginning, played by Clue Gallagher. Now, meanwhile, the partygoers are outside, and they decide while they're waiting for Freddy to get off work, they're just going to go party at the local graveyard because, I mean, what else do you do? So this is where we get to meet Linnea Quigley's character, Trash, who Linnea Quigley is brought into every movie in the 80s to show her breasts at some point, and she gets right into the action.
What would be the most horrible way to die?
Try not to think about dying too much.
Well, for me, the worst way would be for a bunch of old men to get around me and start biting and eating me alive.
I see.
First, they would tear off my clothes.
Let's get some light over here.
And she just kind of rips her clothes off and then does some naked dancing in a cemetery, as, you know, those crazy 80s kids do, you know?
I have so much to say on this. First of all, grade A boobs.
Uh-huh.
Like, those are some nice, nice
primo
honkers. Like,
primo tits.
The other thing is, even though she sounds very turned on by it, she says it's like a nightmare for her. Which I kind of understand, because I too have had nightmares of older men, like, I don't know, like Eric, Tommy, Joe, Justin, tearing my clothes off and eating me alive. No, I'm just kidding. but also, can we talk about when she gets, like, I think this is the part as well, where she just takes not just the top off, she takes everything off. Where is her pussy?
Yeah.
She looks like a Ken doll.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because they filmed it originally showing her bush, and the director, Dan O'Bannon, looked at it like, oh God, we can't just have her fucking pussy out here showing to the goddamn world. So he had the special effects team make her an underpart that just basically made her look like a Ken doll on her lower half. So that is a prosthetic she wears for the whole time to hide her pussy.
So disturbing, because that's all I can focus on. They want me to focus on her tits, but I'm like, what is happening with her vagina?
No, how do you finger bang that thing? I tried. It didn't work. It's just like touching the outside of a Qdoba package, and it's not working at all. So have you tried to finger bang a fucking Qdoba wrapper? Difficult. It's a high level fucking thing. You need a lighter.
Maybe you can take one of the razor blades off of one of the other punks around her and just open that thing up. I just made myself sad.
So Bert gets back and he meets up with them. He's not fucking happy about what they've done. I told you not to mess with the top secret barrels that I left in my fucking office. So they need to go, and they decide, you know what? All we got to do is fucking kill this thing. They talk about how in Night of the Living Dead, all you got to do is fucking kill the brain of this thing and we'll be good. So the plan is they go to open up the door. Fucking Frank's got a pickaxe, and then when it comes through, they hit this thing. Well, this fucking nude Homer Simpson comes and bum rushes Frank immediately to the ground. They then fucking Clue Gallagher, who played by Bert comes over and fucking spikes it with it right through the head, hits it in the brain. It's still moving, going wild, does nothing to stop it, the effects of anything. So then fucking Bert comes over and grabs a fucking a hacksaw to cut its head off like this. And I pulled this piece of audio because I think I can't stop laughing at Frank's scream while this all happens. This is just Frank screaming as the head's getting cut off while he has this thing pinned down.
Oh! 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 Be a man, Frank, be a man.
I think this will be a permanent drop from now on, just every time Jeremy starts talking about any story. Just that will be my new drop from now on.
I love it. Every time Jeremy starts trivia, be like, what actor?
So So they have a little powwow after dismembering most of this body that won't stop moving, that they need to go take it to the crematorium that Ernie owns across the street, because Bert has known Ernie for about 25 years. They were gay puppets in a last life.
I was just putting that together.
So now we'll get more into Bert as we see when we finally, or we'll get more into Ernie when we meet Ernie, but there's some interesting things I don't know if you picked up on, but I'll definitely talk about shortly here.
Sure.
Now meanwhile, we get to see Linnea Quigley outside trash. She's still naked, she's still partying, she turns up, it's a fucking graveyard party, let's do this, right? Bert talks to Ernie though, who is as he walks up, Ernie is embalming a body because he works at the crematorium that is within the cemetery there, and he's getting a body all prepped for its final resting place. Now if you pick up on this, Ernie is totally a Nazi in hiding, okay? So he's, first of all, on his Walkman, he's listening to the German Afrika Korps marching song called Panzer Rollen in Afrika War. So it's actually the Nazi marching song for the front of Africa. And he also knows his way around a crematorium, okay? On top of that, when Bert sneaks up on Ernie, he pulls a Walther P-38, which is a German-issued handgun. And if you look really closely, if you look on his backboard there, he actually just has a picture of Eva Braun, who is Hitler's girlfriend. So Hitler's girlfriend slash wife. So
yeah. I didn't pick up on any of that. Wow.
Yeah, he's a total Nazi in hiding that's just been living in America since the 1960s, because he says he's known Bert for 25 years, which means in the 1960s is when he would have shown up and started owning this crematorium. You know, you talk about that and then escaping Nazi Germany and the fucking Nuremberg trials, and boom, you're right here in Return of the Living Dead.
That's crazy. I'm amazed that you picked up on all of that. I'm a little embarrassed that I didn't, because he just kind of reminded me of my grandpa.
Oh, you're your grandfather that survived the Holocaust as a guard, right? That's
yeah, my last name is Pontius. It's German.
It's funny, the whole week I spent at the beach, I actually read this actually horrific but very, very entertaining book called Ordinary Men. And check it out if we have any readers in our listenership. I'm not sure that we do, but if you do, if you like reading books, I usually, every vacation, I bring a new book to read. And this one, it's called Ordinary Men. And it literally recaps German Police Reserve Battalion 101. Goes off of their records from their trials, and they were one of the so there's two parts of the Holocaust. There was the Holocaust that happened in the giant crematoriums, Auschwitz and Birkenau and all that stuff. And then there's what's called the Holocaust by bullet, which is where police forces just went out and cleared out entire towns of Jewish families in Poland. And Reserve Battalion 101 was one of the groups that was the first ones that had to start carrying out the Holocaust. And it's a very interesting story about how why people went along with it, and how these ordinary guys who were 30 to 40 years old just decided, yeah, it's cool, we're just gonna kill all the Jews, it's not a big deal. And it's a very interesting look at all of that. And if you want to be really fucking horrified, and put it like this, after you read that book, you probably won't call Trump Hitler anymore. I really don't see the same kind of parallel lines as this and that. I just agreed. Don't see the same thing. So when you compare things like that, I just read the book, and I find it a very fascinating look at the human condition, and how being part of the group and the people that said no, they wouldn't do it, and how they all handled it. It's very, very good. It's not a super long book. It's about 190-ish pages, so definitely check that out. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, man, it really was, and it's been in my brain. And you want to if you want to read about real fucking life horror, that book is it. Just hearing about people having to mass murder women, children, and just completely helpless people is pretty fucking horrifying. And way scarier than Return of the the Living. Like, I take a break from that so I can watch Return of the Living Dead. To get,
well,
to get
and I agree with you about like the weird comparison, because I'm like, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think they're quite the same. Like, one likes to eat McDonald's for breakfast, and the other is like, I think I should kill a baby. Like, it's different.
McDonald's sounds like a Jew name.
See, why is there, is it me, unless you know of one, how is there not a horror movie where Jewish people, like Jewish zombies, come back from the dead to wreak revenge? I know we've got Nazi zombie movies.
Yeah, there is Dead Snow, but yeah, where's the Jewish ones that come back? That is a good point. It's as almost as if they control the media and are suppressing it. That is 100% a joke, and is not in the book Ordinary Men. I will tell you that. That's a Quality Time ridge right there.
What I was gonna say though is like they actually. I was gonna say they're actually the chosen people, so they actually have an afterlife.
So Bert talks, who's clearly a Nazi, Ernie, who's clearly a Nazi, tells Bert that he's working out the rigor mortis in this body. Rigor mortis will come into play as we go further into the story here. They bring in the bag that they want to dispose of. They try to lie and say it's a bunch of fucking animals that they found. And he was just like, well, let me put them out of their misery. It's just cruel to burn a live thing. Again, alluding to that this guy was probably a guy that worked in a Nazi crematorium. He's like, of course, you kill them first. You don't just put them in the fucking oven. And then... They come clean and show him that it's a dismembered body, that is all the parts are still moving. It actually grabs Ernie's leg and rips a part of his fucking pant off, which is a strong single colored burgundy red matching shirt and pant, which is, God, I want to own his get up real hard. Nothing would make me look more like a piece of shit that plays chess on a Sunday afternoon in New York than this get up. And,
oh my God, yes.
So he's clearly shook by the whole thing. Now, meanwhile, this is all going down. Tina goes back to the Unita medical supply store to look for Freddy, so she's now separated from her group in the cemetery. Ernie finally relents and says he'll fire up the crematorium for him. Bert gives him a hand, loading it in there, and you can see that Frank actually looks at him doing it, and he was just like, he acts like this is so hard. I could do this my whole self. Foreshadowing for later. And, but Freddy and Frank are not looking so hot as this all goes down. Now smoke begins to billow from the chimneys, and you can see as it all starts, the smoke starts billowing out from the crematorium into the sky. You'll see a giant rainstorm happening at the same time. So the smoke's being sucked up into the clouds, and then precipitation is coming back and falling on our partygoers that are just having the time of their life in this fucking cemetery. Linnea Quigley even mentions that it's burning my naked skin. So they go to seek refuge in the car, which is a piece of shit, like 1950s Chevy that they pulled the top on and it's still leaking. She's still getting dripped on, still complaining that it's burning, still upset that she's the only one that's not wearing clothes, right? And we slowly see this kind of scene as it drips all the way into the ground, into like the fucking seeps into like the coffins of the folks in the cemetery, meaning shit's about to fucking go down for reals. And
This is my second favorite movie where the weather plays the part of aggressor.
What's your first favorite?
Twister.
That's a good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Twister
is a good
one.
I like the use of weather as a problem. Like, ooh, it's not even a person. It's like, oh my God, precipitation is
yo,
it's the villain. Movie.
Yo, it's precipitating again. Run for your lives.
I'm going to make a movie called The Precipitation.
and then followed by
the sequel of I should know these. Isn't it Three Cycle? precipitation.
Gas,
what are the other two?
Liquid.
No, but what? Are, they're all Asians.
Fog.
Like precipitation.
The fog. Precipitation, what? And just the regular old water. Ice.
Wow.
solid gas and liquid.
I know, but I'm saying, oh God.
Well, then gas
would
be your
breathe, but you're like, I don't know either.
No, so there's precipitation, right? And so that's your liquid, right? And then there's your gas, which is going to be fog, right? Condensation.
Condensation.
There you go.
There we go. There's one more.
And I don't know. Listen, this is not a scientific podcast, all right?
I know I'm being the Jeremy right now, but I
We had him for one show gone, and you're going to go Jeremy it up for this episode, huh?
I know. I couldn't think of any character to be like him. It's not Ashley.
Actually, it was Ashley's the third state.
I'm the worst.
So the punks are sheltering in their car from the rain as they start to hear creepy sounds coming from the graveyard. Tina's inside the medical supply place looking for Freddy, and she finds the canister that's busted open down in the basement. And as she does that, she finally gets to meet Tar Man! So that's the Tar Man. Man, what a magical piece of monster movie magic. He just looks like a man completely covered in black. There's like some bones that are poking through, a face that only fucking someone who's like lived through a crematorium could love. It's just honestly, if you go back to one of our older episodes, it looks very much like the Father's Day kind of face from Creepshow, that like monster face. A lot of exposed teeth in front, but eyeballs still looking great somehow.
It's such a good character. Like, to me, for me personally, Tar Man is one of the most iconic horror movie characters, like visually. Like, there's something that sticks with you about him for forever. Because like every time I look at him, he reminds me of when I've kept my tampon in too long. Like,
oh God, you pull it out. You're like, no more brains, please. Kill me.
I'm sorry. And it's evaporation, by the way. That's the other one.
There we go. Evaporation, condensation, and just precipitation. Now we got it.
I smell a trilogy.
So she ends up barricading herself in a metal closet because she falls through one of the steps. Tar Man has the wherewithal and the brains to use a chain and a winch to start busting open this thing. But luckily, her friends come to her aid. And unfortunately, old Suicide, our punk rocker, takes the fucking bullet this time. Bites him in the fucking head and starts eating his brains out. Spider throws a fucking paint can at him, and it just seems to irritate him, and they all make a run upstairs and barricade the door. Man, what a fun thing. I like how Spider is just like, this is one of the things about like 80s black guys, like, in real life, that guy sees like, fuck, get the fuck out of here, you dumb bitch. And he doesn't throw a paint can at that thing. He runs for his life. Black people don't mess around with the supernatural, man. They're out of that bitch. But I like that the spider, going against all stereotypes, just goes and tries to become fodder for this thing.
Well, I love the biting of the skull. I don't know why that is, but I don't feel like you see a lot of that behavior in other zombie movies. I mean, you'll see them eating arms and things like that, but something about going after the skull, and I think you even kind of hear like crunch. I don't know why. I think that is just the coolest scene. I love that.
Yeah, I like it. They use the sound effect for every like skull crunching sound in this movie is like the same one they use for every Crunch and Munch commercial from the 90s. Like, it's that same kind of just like, it's a real crisp, like I just bit into celery kind of sound. And I do love it. Do love that.
Yeah, that sound effect is also the same when I crush a guy between my thighs. It's all the same.
Ooh, yeah. So the paramedics then come to check out Freddie and Frank, who aren't doing so well. They basically talk to each other after checking out Frank and Freddie, and for all intents and purposes, they're dead. So Frank's not handling that news very well. Meanwhile, the kids are barricaded, have barricaded the door to the basement where Tar Man is. They run back to the cemetery to try to find Freddy in a panic, and they see the dead rising from their graves. Party time! Again, more of the great soundtrack, very much parodying the 80s here. They all go to run for it in the pouring rain, dead popping up everywhere. And unfortunately, Linnea Quigley meets her demise here in the exact way that she said she never wanted to die, which is being ripped apart by a bunch of old people in a cemetery, fully nude in a puddle of mud. So, oh man, what a fucking fun time. And
again, I have the same fear, but I'm afraid the soundtrack will be to the band Puddle of Mud.
Yes. It's just like, no
90s grunge for my demise.
So Trash is no more, but don't worry, her sweet titties will turn up in ghoul form shortly enough. So Ernie goes to open the door because they can hear the teens banging on the outside of the crematorium. It's Spider and Spud and Tina all outside. They explain the situation to him. Party Girl and the other dude Chuck run back to the medical supply warehouse, not realizing that they've left Trash all by herself alone and her sweet tits to be devoured by the undead. Now the paramedics show up and they are fucking get totally eaten immediately after they go back outside to go check on their stuff. Panic is setting in. The entire situation is getting out of control. Tina's happy that she's finally reunited with Freddy, who's still not doing so hot. Ernie goes out to the ambulance to check on the paramedic who's getting munched on out there. He fires a couple rounds, and I love this scene. He's seeing one of the paramedics getting fucking eaten to death outside, and I guess they got a real paraplegic to do this who just has no legs and one arm. He shoots this thing, and it pops back up and does this creepy fucking run squat at him, and it is fucking horrifying to look at. I don't like any part of it, but I do respect any horror movie that gets a legit disabled person to play a horrific monster that they all really are.
Hashtag inclusive.
Hashtag all. I don't know. I couldn't think of a good hashtag for that. So
body parts matter.
Yes, all body parts matter. So Ernie comes back from the ambulance, and they're under attack, and they decide to fucking fortify the place, which cues another musical montage by the Cramps.
You got the rubber nails? Ooh, baby, your hat for Peter Hung 10. The Hodads and Grammy say you're
which, by the way, I don't know if I've ever expressed this, but my love of the band The Cramps is through the roof. And they have made lots of horror movie appearances, but not to be forgotten by this one, which is Doing the Dead. They're like a very 1950s rock and roll style, but they just talk about murder and zombies and stuff like that. Very fun. Ahead of their time. So, they end up fortifying this entire place, and as that's going down, one of the zombies goes and urges them to send more paramedics.
How many fucking windows you got?
More. I'm in distress. Send more paramedics.
Which I don't understand how becoming a zombie also gives you the octave range of a Barry White, but I like it. Like, I like it. I like that.
But isn't that interesting? Because what other horror movies do we really know of? It's very different. Like you said, it's very unique. What other horror movies do we know of where the zombies are able to still think, to still vocalize. Like, that's very different.
Yeah, it is very different. It's also worth mentioning, it's the first zombie movie that we're all kind of used to it as the zombies kind of got rebooted in like the 2000s. This is the first one that really had running zombies. I mean, because, you know, we didn't see this again. Very different from Romero's, which were all very slow moving. They were all power in numbers. These ones are also totally unstoppable, fast, athletic monsters that know how to use simple tools, that can say they want brains and can vocalize. And you won't see this kind of speed out of a zombie again until about, what, 2002, which I think is when 28 Days Later came out, roughly, yes, if I had to mention. So
that sounds right. I think I also feel a little bit of jealousy and frustration watching these zombies, because I'm like, oh man, like a man that vocalizes his needs and wants, like, why can't I find one of those?
we are a very, very sought after bunch, and they can't, we're like the Mewtwo of Pokemon men. That's we're not around very much.
Man, I thought my references were off the wall today. I'm like, condensation. You're like, Pokemon.
It's been a week, okay? And this is what builds up in me. So, so now that the paramedics, another set of fucking, oh, no, I've skipped over something. Let me go back. They're sending more paramedics. They calm down Bert and they clean out everything with the rest of the group. Freddy, though, is not doing fucking well.
You know what? Looks like rigor mortis is setting in.
Rigor mortis? What do you mean, rigor mortis?
I love that he just, him say, rigor mortis, fucking rigor mortis, man. It's gotta get him fucking out of here. All of these lines just fucking crack me up for some reason. So the other paramedics show up shortly after that, and they get immediately overtaken by the dead. One of the windows comes undone, and they try to go board it back up, and in the process, Scud, one of the other punks, gets bitten in the head by probably the frailest of all undead things out there. They end up actually pulling that thing halfway through, chopping it in half in a gore-filled fest with a piece of fucking Scud's brain missing, and they take the remaining part of this and tie it down to a gurney in the other room to interrogate this undead beast. So as they have it tied down, they go to ask it a few questions, and it is, honestly, this thing that they have tied down is a beautiful piece of puppetry that you can see. It looks like a woman who's fucking just could only, I don't know, could be like a 90s super emaciated model, like the only thing that she could possibly be in real life before she had died.
I was going to say, I didn't realize that it was a puppet. I thought Kim Cattrall was in this movie.
Yes, it was Kim Cattrall the entire time. So Bert goes and, or Ernie goes and interrogates this corpse.
You can hear me.
Yes.
Why do you eat people?
Not people. Brains.
Brains only?
Yes.
Why?
The pain.
What about the pain?
The pain of being dead.
It hurts to be dead.
I can feel myself rot.
Eating brains. How does that make you feel?
It makes the pain go away.
Which also goes back to Ernie's Nazi reference, as he seems like, if you watch his reaction really closely here, you can see that he's upset that dead people still feel pain, most likely because he's killed a couple thousand Jewish people in his lifetime. So,
well, I have to say, I really enjoyed that scene because it is like word for word what my bio was on my Tinder when I was going through my goth phase. Brains. There's so much pain.
Oh
man, that's so good. So meanwhile, we get to see the reanimated corpse of Linnea Quigley's character, Trash, not bitten up at all, but tits still rocking and a weird fucking Barbie doll undercarriage exposed to the world. She goes and attacks a street bum with her weird hair and has a huge mouth every time she bites somebody, which is pretty cool to see. Meanwhile, the other girl, Party Girl, and Chuck are having a little moment where she says that she still hates him but gives him a hug. It's kind of fun. They stick Frank and Freddy in the chapel of the crematorium so to isolate them from the rest, saying they're going to turn into one of these motherfuckers any second. Tina, who's fucking really not smart, decides to stay locked in there with Freddy until his final moments. Now, outside, the police finally show up. They draw their guns, but they see the fucking brains getting eaten out by the fucking paramedic over there. They open fire on the dead, but are easily overtaken by them. Tina, meanwhile, in the chapel, hears Freddy take his last breath.
The one thing only that can leave this world was suffering.
What, Freddy? What?
Live. Brains!
Oh, no! Freddy! Freddy wants brains, so he pops up, and luckily our heroes were listening close by. They kick open the door and fight Freddy off so that Tina is able to escape. But during all the commotion, Frank escapes through the fucking door, not quite yet a full-blown zombie like Freddy is, and they ultimately take a giant thing of acid and just burn his eyes closed. So now we have a blinded Freddy that's walking around the crematorium looking for brains. Spider, Ernie, Bert, and Tina decide that their only option left is to run for the car. So Ernie, unfortunately, can't run because he's got a broken foot. So they're locked in the crematorium with that fucking screaming bitch who's just singing brains, brains, brains. Freddy is still in the chapel, but he's slowly breaking his way out, making their way to them. So Spider and Bert make a run for the cop car that's still running. They're able to get in, and they start driving through the mall of the undead left and right, running over people. They try to get close enough to the door, but are completely overcome by just body upon body on top of the car, so they just decide to fucking leave them behind and make a run for it to try to get help. So, but as they crash through the cemetery gates, they see that Linnea Quigley has made herself about 50 or 60 zombies out on the streets alone, so now they can't even do that, and they crash into the medical supply store where Bert and Spider get reunited with Chuck and the Party Girl. So meanwhile, after all that has happened, inside the mortuary, Bert and Tina climb up to an attic that's above the embalming room there, and they close the door as Freddy is not happy that they're not in that room. So he's looking for Tina. We see Frank, though, who has slipped away earlier, going into the crematory furnace. He takes a look, and this part is actually, honestly, it kind of got me the first time I saw it. He looks at his wedding ring because he's sad that his wife he'll never see his wife again. He goes and fires the thing up, and he takes one last look at his wedding ring and just says the sweetest thing in the entire world. That is the end of Frank, who burns himself alive in the crematory right there.
I want it in my wedding vows. I just want a guy to be like, I love you, and then just scream in my face. So, for all the pain and suffering I'm going to cause.
Yes, enjoy the next 20 years here. Ah! So
I have a podcast.
No! I'm not going to subscribe! So, back at the medical supply place, they decide that they need to get to the phone that's in the basement where the tar man is. But they say, you know what? Fuck it. Bert steps up to the plate. He grabs a baseball bat and he says, fuck it. I'm going to knock that thing's block off the second it walks up. And I'm like, all right, Bert, finally taking some goddamn initiative. I like it. So, While that's happening, Tina is having a time with Frank as he or Tina and Ernie are having a time with Freddy in the other room.
Tina! But I don't care, darling, because I love you. You've got to let me eat your
Which I just listen. Great acting by the great Tom Matthews. Just nobody made me want to eat brains and show love and compassion all in one sentence as him.
Wow, I could have taught you that. I eat brains all the time with lots of compassion and understanding. Like, oh my God, you're great.
So, Bert is in ready position as Spider opens the door for him. And just fucking takes Tar Man's head clean off with the baseball bat in just one amazing Mark McGuire steroid riddled stroke. And they make their way down to the basement where they are able to call the police.
Please, please!
Just a minute, I can't hear where there's a loud noise out here. Hey, what the hell's going on?
But the police barricade that is outside that he's called to has completely been overrun by the undead and is slowly making their way further into the city. It's in total chaos. Well, without many other options left, Bert decides to call the number on the side of the tank. Finally, some customer service. He gets there and finally gets in touch with Colonel Glover, who, keep in mind, has done nothing in the last 24 hours to look for this goddamn barrel except sit on a beach, drink scotch with his old wife, who's not giving him any pussy, and fucking he sits there, takes scrupulous notes, is a good listener, and he's like, mm-hmm. And then what did they do? Okay, that's interesting. Nice. Uh-huh. All right. So he calls his superior and lets him know the bad news.
It turned up in Louisville. I'm getting confirmations on this from the Louisville Police Department. Louisville, Kentucky, sir. Well, sir, it would be good news, except that the eggs have hatched.
Oh, the eggs have hatched. So, not good. They know there's a giant outbreak out there. So, the fucking colonel calls in a missile strike. And basically, as they're all sitting there, everybody hears the bomb drop.
Tina.
Giant explosion takes out the entire city.
Spectacular results, sir. Very close to optimal placement. Well, sir, only 20 square blocks destroyed. Less than 4,000 dead, General. I wouldn't worry about the fires, General. The rain is taking care of that right now. Well, there have been complaints about burning skin, but I shouldn't worry. Minor irritation, General. The rain will wash everything away. That's correct, sir. All should be back to normal by morning. Yes, sir. I understand the president will visit Louisville tomorrow. No, we wouldn't want that to happen, sir. No, sir. This hasn't been very pleasant for anyone.
So all of it is just they blew that everything. The rain is still happening, so it just fucking rains all this shit back down onto the world, causing more mass chaos and undoubtedly a world filled with zombies moving forward, which brings us to an end of Return of the Living Dead. Oh, we did it, guys. We did it. What a fun movie, you know? What a fun movie. There was nuclear holocaust. There were zombies. There were Nazis. I mean, there were fucking titties. What else do you want in a film, Ashley?
Perfect. It's a perfect movies. You got dead people. You got titties. I don't know what else you want me to ask for. But I have to say, though, real quick, you just said about the general being like, oh, he's not getting any pussy. No. That is his fault, because the other day at the beginning of the movie, she goes, I made you pork chops.
My bad. She did make him pork chops. That's on him. That is on him.
He's like, I don't want what you're offering. He's like, I want that dead girl.
Yeah, if I had that fucking half a corpse that's into brains, maybe I could get some brains. You know what I'm talking about? So now, I listen, I love this film. It belongs as one of the most important horror films of the 80s. It, you know, it built on concepts that started with Evil Dead and moved it on and made the zombie genre fun again. And, you know, we got to see titties. We got to see everything. We got a star-studded cast. It was just amazing from beginning to end, Ash. And I'm glad that you were able to join us once again for this amazing endeavor.
Great. I loved it. It was such a good time. What else would I be doing on a Sunday?
Nothing. Just hanging with us. Hanging with me. Hanging with Jeremy. Ash, where can people find you at? What's going on in the Ashley world?
Ooh, so I do have some shows coming up in August, so keep an eye on those. I know that I am hosting for you August 21st.
Ooh!
Aye. So if you like Eric and you like me, why not come see us? So let's go to the Itty Bitty Pretzel City.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. Get a fucking dog with us up in Hanover. You can catch all of my dates and everything at ericcomedy.com, Eric with a K, comedy with a C, and all that shit will be there. I guess I'll take us out. Ashley, I need to get your brains or something.
Moist.
I'm leaving the moist in.